plan. When I hesitate, he says, "Come on, I know she tells you everything." Not really. Not this time, anyway. Honestly, Josh, I didn't know a thing about it. Promise. I cross my heart. Josh absorbs this. Chewing on his bottom lip, he says, "Maybe she'll change her mind. That's possible, right?" I don't know if it's more heartless for me to say yes or no, because he'll be hurt either way. Because while I'm 99.99999% sure that she will get back together with him, there's that tiny chance she won't. And I don't want to get his hopes up, so I don't say anything. He swallows, his Adam's apple bobbing up and down. "No, you're right. When Margot makes up her mind, she doesn't go back on it." "Please, please, please don't cry." I rest my head on his shoulder and say, "You never know, Joshy." Josh stares straight ahead. A squirrel is darting up the big oak tree in the yard. Up and down and back up again. We both watch. "What time does she land?" "Not for hours." Is she coming home for Thanksgiving?" "No, they don't get off for Thanksgiving. It's Scotland, Josh. They don't celebrate American holidays, hello." I'm teasing again, but my heart's not in it. "That's right," he says. I say, "She'll be home for Christmas, though." And we both sigh.
"Can I still hang out with you guys?"
Josh asks me. "Me and Kitty?"
"Your dad, too."
"We're not going anywhere," I assure him. Josh looks relieved.
"Good. I'd hate to lose you, too."
As soon as he says it, my heart does this pause, and I forget to breathe, and just for that one second, I'm dizzy. And then, just as quickly as it came, the feeling, the strange flutter in my chest, is gone, and the tow truck arrives. When we pull into my driveway, he says,
"Do you want me to be there when you tell your dad?"
I brighten up, and then I remember how Margot said I'm in charge now. I'm pretty sure taking responsibility for one's mistakes is part of being in charge. Chapter 9. Daddy isn't so mad after all. I go through my whole good news, bad news spiel, and he just sighs and says,
"As long as you're all right."
The car needs a special part that has to be flown in from Indiana or Idaho. I can't remember which. In the meantime, I'll have to share the car with Daddy and take the bus to school or ask Josh for rides, which was already my plan. Margot calls later that night. Kitty and I are watching TV, and I scream for Daddy to come quick. We sit on the couch and pass the phone around and take turns talking to her. "Margot, guess what happened today?" Kitty shouts. Frantically, I shake my head at her. "Don't tell her about the car," I mouth. I give her warning eyes. "Lara Jean got into..." Kitty pauses tantalizingly. "A fight with Daddy." "Yeah, she was mean to me, and Daddy told her to be nice, so they had a fight." I grab the phone out of her hand. "We didn't have a fight, Gogo. Kitty's just being annoying." "What did you guys have for dinner? Did you cook the chicken I defrosted last night?" Margot asks. Her voice sounds so far away. I push the volume up on the phone. "Yes, but never mind about that. Are you settled into your room? Is it big? What's your roommate like?" "She's nice. She's from London, and she has a really fancy accent. Her name is Penelope St. George Dixon." "Gosh, even her name sounds fancy," I say. "What about your room?" "The room is about the same as that dorm we saw at UVA. It's just older." "What time is it over there?" "It's almost midnight. We're 5 hours ahead, remember?" We're 5 hours ahead. Like she's already considering Scotland her home. And she's only been gone a day, not even. "We miss you already," I tell her. "Miss you too." After dinner, I text Chris to see if she wants to come over, but she doesn't text back. She's probably out with one of the guys she hooks up with, which is fine. I should catch up on my scrapbooking. I was hoping to be done with Margot's scrapbook before she left for college, but as anyone who's ever scrapbooked knows, Rome wasn't built in a day. You could spend a year or more working on one scrapbook. I've got Motown girl group music playing, and my supplies are laid out all around me in a semicircle. My heart hole punch, pages and pages of scrapbook paper, pictures I've cut out of magazines, glue gun, my tape dispenser with all my different colored washi tapes, souvenirs like the playbill from when we saw Wicked in New York, receipts, pictures, ribbons, buttons, stickers, charms. A good scrapbook has texture. It's thick and chunky and doesn't close all the way. I'm working on a Josh and Margot page. I don't care what Margot says. They're getting back together. I know it. And even if they aren't, not right away, it's not like Margot can just erase him from her history. He was such a big part of her senior year and, like, her life. The only compromise I'm willing to make is I was saving my heart washi tape for this page, but I can just do a regular plaid tape instead. But then I put the plaid tape up against the pictures, and the colors don't look as good. So I go ahead and use the heart tape. And then, swaying to the music, I use my heart template to cut out a picture of the two of them at prom. Margot's going to love this. I'm carefully gluing a dried rose petal from Margot's corsage when my dad raps on the door.
"What are you up to tonight?"
he asks me. "This," I say, gluing another petal. "If I keep at it, it'll probably be done by Christmas." My dad doesn't move. He just hovers there in the doorway watching me work.
"Well, I'm going to watch that new Ken Burns documentary in a bit, if you want to join me."
"Maybe," I say just to be nice. It'll be too much of a pain to bring all my supplies downstairs and get set up again. I'm in a good rhythm right now. "Why don't you get it started without me?"
"All righty, I'll leave you to it then."
Daddy shuffles down the stairs. It takes me most of the night, but I finish the Josh and Margot page, and it comes out really nice. Next is a sister page. For this one, I use flowered paper for the background, and I glue in a picture of the three of us from a long time ago. Mommy took it. We're standing in front of the oak tree in front of our house in our church clothes. We're all wearing white dresses, and we have matching pink ribbons in our hair. The best thing about the picture is Margot and I are smiling sweetly, and Kitty is picking her nose. I smile to myself. Kitty's going to pitch a fit when she sees this page. I can't wait. Chapter 10. Margot says that junior year is the most important year, the busiest year, a year so crucial that everything else in life hinges upon it. So I figure I should get in all the pleasure reading I can before school starts next week and junior year officially begins. I'm sitting on my front steps, reading a 1980s romantic British spy novel I got for 75 cents at the Friends of the Library sale. I'm just getting to the good stuff. Cressida must seduce Nigel to gain access to the spy codes when Josh walks out of his house to get the mail. He sees me, too. He lifts his hand like he's just going to wave and not come over, but then he does.
"Hey, nice onesie," he says as he makes his way across the driveway.
It's faded light blue with sunflowers, and it ties around the neck. I got it from the vintage store, 75% off. And it's not a onesie. "This is a sunsuit," I tell him, going back to my book. I try to subtly hide the cover with my hand. The last thing I need is Josh giving me a hard time for reading a trashy book when I'm just trying to enjoy a relaxing afternoon. I can feel him looking at me, his arms crossed, waiting. I look up.
"What?"
"Want to see a movie tonight at the Bess? There's a Pixar movie playing. We can take Kitty."
"Sure. Text me when you want to head over," I say, turning the page of my book. Nigel is unbuttoning Cressida's blouse, and she's wondering when the sleeping pill she slipped in his Merlot will kick in, while simultaneously hoping it won't kick in too soon because Nigel is actually quite a good kisser. Josh reaches down and tries to get a closer look at my book. I slap his hand away, but not before he reads out loud. "Cressida's heart raced as Nigel moved his hand along her stockinged thigh." Josh cracks up. "What the heck are you reading?" My cheeks are burning. "Oh, be quiet." Chuckling, Josh backs away.
"I'll leave you to Cressida and Noel, then."
To his back, I call out, "For your information, it's Nigel." Kitty's over the moon about hanging out with Josh. When Josh asks the girl at the concession stand to layer the butter on the popcorn, bottom, middle, top, we both give an approving nod.
Kitty sits in the middle of us, and at the funny parts, she laughs so hard she kicks her legs up in the air. She weighs so little that the seat keeps tipping up. Josh and I share smiles over her head. Whenever Josh, Margo, and I went to the movies, Margo always sat in the middle, too. It was so she could whisper to both of us. She never wanted me to feel left out because she had a boyfriend and I didn't. She was so careful about this that it made me worry at first, that she sensed something from before. But she's not someone to hold back or pretty up the truth. She's just a really good big sister. The best. There were times I felt left out anyway. Not in a romantic way, but a friend way. Josh and I had always been friends. But those times when he'd put his arm around Margo, when we were in line for popcorn, or in the car when they'd talk softly to each other, and I felt like the kid in the back seat who can't hear what the adults are talking about, it made me feel a little bit invisible. They made me wish I had someone to whisper to in the back seat. It's strange to be the one in the front seat now. The view isn't so different from the back seat. In fact, everything feels good, and normal, and the same, which is a comfort. Chris calls me later that night while I'm painting my toenails different colored pinks. It's so loud in the background, she has to yell. Guess what? What? I can barely hear you. I'm doing my pinky toe a fruit punch color called Hit Me With Your Best Shot. Hold up. I can hear Chris moving rooms because it gets quieter. Can you hear me now? Yes, much better. Guess who broke up? I've moved on to a mauve pink color that looks like whiteout with a drop of red in it. Who? Jen and Kavinsky. She dumped his ass. My eyes go huge. Whoa, why? Apparently she met some UVA guy at that hostessing job she had. I guarantee you she was cheating on Kavinsky the whole summer. A guy calls Chris's name and Chris says, I gotta go. It's my turn at bocce. Chris hangs up without saying goodbye, which is her way. I actually met Chris through Genevieve. They're cousins. Their moms are sisters. Chris used to come over sometimes when we were little, but she and Jen didn't get along even back then. They'd argue over whose Barbie had dibs on Ken, because there was only one Ken. I didn't even try to fight for Ken, even though he was technically mine. Well, Margo's. At school, some people don't even know Jen and Chris are cousins. They don't look alike, like, at all. Jen is petite with fit arms and sunny blonde hair, the color of margarine. Chris is blonde, too, but peroxide blonde, and she's taller and has broad swimmer's shoulders. Still, there is a sameness to them. Chris was pretty wild our freshman year. She went to every party, got drunk, hooked up with older boys. That year, a junior guy from the lacrosse team told everyone that Chris had sex with him in the boys' locker room, and it wasn't even true. Genevieve made Peter threaten to kick his ass if he didn't tell everybody the truth. I thought it was a really nice thing Genevieve did for Chris, but Chris insisted that Jen had only done it so people wouldn't think she was related to a slut. After that, Chris stopped hanging out and pretty much did her own thing with people from another school. She still has that freshman year reputation, though. She acts like she doesn't care, but I know she does, at least a little. Chapter 11. On Sunday, Daddy makes lasagna. He does that thing where he puts black bean salsa in it to jazz it up, and it sounds gross, but it's actually good, and you don't notice the beans. Josh comes over, too, and he has three helpings, which Daddy loves. When Margot's name comes up over dinner, I look over at Josh and see how stiff he gets, and I feel sorry for him. Kitty must notice, too, because she changes the subject over to dessert, which is a batch of peanut butter brownies I baked earlier in the afternoon. Since Daddy cooked, us kids have kitchen duty. He uses every pot in the kitchen when he makes lasagna, so it's the worst cleanup, but worth it. After, the three of us are relaxing in the TV room. It's Sunday night, but there's not that Sunday night feeling in the air because tomorrow is Labor Day, and we have one last day before school starts. Kitty's working on her dog collage. Quelle surprise. What kind do you want most of all? Josh asks her. Kitty answers back lightning fast. An Akita. Boy or girl? Again, her answer is prompt. Boy? What'll you name him? Kitty hesitates, and I know why. I roll over and tickle Kitty's bare foot. I know what you'll name him, I say in a sing-song voice. Be quiet, Lara Jean, she screeches. I have Josh's full attention now. Come on, tell us, Josh begs. I look at Kitty and she's giving me evil, glowy red eyes. Never mind, I say, feeling nervous all of a sudden. Kitty might be the baby of the family, but she is not someone to trifle with. Then Josh tugs on my ponytail and says, Aw, come on, Lara Jean, don't leave us in suspense. I prop myself up on my elbows and Kitty tries to put her hand over my mouth. Giggling, I say, It's after a boy she likes. Shut up, Lara Jean, shut up! Kitty kicks me, and in doing so, she accidentally rips one of her dog pictures. She lets out a cry and drops to her knees and examines it. Her face is red with the effort of not crying. I feel like such a jerk. I sit up and try to give her an I'm sorry hug, but she twists away from me and kicks at my leg so hard I yelp. I pick the picture up and try to tape it back, but before I can, Kitty snatches it out of my hands and gives it to Josh. Josh, fix it, she says. Lara Jean ruined it. Kitty, I was only teasing, I say lamely. I wasn't going to say the name of the boy. I would never ever have said it. She ignores me, and Josh smooths the paper back out with a coaster, and with the concentration of a surgeon, he tapes the two pieces together. He wipes his brow. Phew, I think this one will make it. I clap, and I try to catch Kitty's eye, but she won't look at me. I know I deserve it. The boy Kitty has a crush on. It's Josh. Kitty whisks her collage away from Josh. Stiffly, she says, I'm going upstairs to work on this. Good night, Josh. Night, Kitty, Josh says. Meekly, I say, Good night, Kitty. But she's already running up the stairs, and she doesn't reply. When we hear the sound of her bedroom door closing, Josh turns to me and says, You're in so much trouble. I know, I say. I've got a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. Why did I do that? Even as I was doing it, I knew it was wrong. Margot would never have done that to me. That's not how big sisters are supposed to treat their little sisters, especially not when I'm so much older than Kitty. Who's this kid she likes? Just a boy from school. Josh sighs. Is she really old enough to have crushes on boys? I feel like she's too young for all that. I had crushes on boys when I was 9, I tell him. I'm still thinking about Kitty. I wonder how I can make it so she isn't mad at me anymore. Somehow, I don't think snickerdoodles will cut it this time. Who? Josh asks me. Who what? Maybe if I can somehow convince Daddy to buy her a puppy. Who was your first crush? My first real crush? I had kindergarten and first and second grade crushes aplenty, but they don't really count. Like, the first one that really mattered? Sure. Well, I guess Peter Kavinsky. Josh practically gags. Kavinsky? Are you kidding me? He's so obvious. I thought you'd be into someone more, I don't know, subtle. Peter Kavinsky's such a cliche. He's like a cardboard cutout of a cool guy in a movie about high school. I shrug. You asked. Wow, he says, shaking his head. Just, wow. He used to be different. I mean, he was still very Peter, but less so. When Josh looks unconvinced, I say, You're a boy, so you can't understand what I'm talking about. You're right, I don't understand. Hey, you're the one who had a crush on Ms. Rothschild. Josh turns red. She was really pretty back then. Uh-huh. I give him a knowing look. She was really pretty. Our across-the-street neighbor, Ms. Rothschild, used to mow her lawn in terry-cloth short shorts and a string bikini top. The neighborhood boys would conveniently come and play in Josh's yard on those days. Anyway, Ms. Rothschild wasn't my first crush. She wasn't? No, you were. It takes me a few seconds to process this. Even then, all I can manage is, huh? When I first moved here, before I knew your true personality. I kick him in the shin for that, and he yelps. I was 12, and you were 11. I let you ride my scooter, remember? That scooter was my pride and joy. I saved up for it for 2 birthdays, and I let you take it for a ride. I thought you were just being generous. You crashed it, and you got a big scratch on the side, he continues. Remember that? Yeah, I remember you cried.
I didn't cry. I was justifiably upset, and that was the end of my little crush.
Josh gets up to go, and we walk to the foyer. Before he opens the front door, Josh turns around and says to me,
I don't know what I would have done if you hadn't been around after Margot dumped me.
A blush blooms pink across his face, underneath each sweetly freckled cheek.
You're keeping me going, Lara Jean.
Josh looks at me and I feel it all. Every memory, every moment we've ever shared. Then he gives me a quick, fierce hug and disappears into the night. I'm standing there in the open door, and the thought flies in my head, so quick, so unexpected, I can't stop myself from thinking it. If you were mine, I would never have broken up with you. Not in a million years. Chapter 12. This is how we met Josh. We were having a teddy bear tea party picnic on the back lawn with real tea and muffins. It had to be in the backyard so no one would see. I was 11, way too old for it, and Margot was 13, way, way too old. I got the idea in my head because I read about it in a book. Because of Kitty, I could pretend it was for her and persuade Margot into playing with us. Mommy had died the year before, and ever since, Margot rarely said no to anything if it was for Kitty. We had everything spread out on Margot's old baby blanket, which was blue and nubby with a squirrel print. I laid out a chipped tea set of Margot's, mini muffins studded with blueberries and granules of sugar that I made Daddy buy at the grocery store, and a teddy bear for each of us. We were all wearing hats, because I insisted. You have to wear a hat to a tea party, I kept saying, until Margot finally put hers on just so I'd stop. She had on Mommy's straw gardening hat, and Kitty was wearing a tennis visor, and I'd fancied up an old fur hat of Grandma's by pinning a few plastic flowers on top. I was pouring lukewarm tea out of the thermos and into cups when Josh climbed up on the fence and watched us. The month before, from the upstairs playroom, we'd watched Josh's family move in. We'd hoped for girls, but then we saw the movers unload a boy bike, and we went back to playing. Josh sat up on the fence, not saying anything, and Margot was really stiff and embarrassed. Her cheeks were red, but she kept her hat on. Kitty was the one to call out to him. Hello, boy, she said. Hi, he said. His hair was shaggy and he kept shaking it out of his eyes. He was wearing a red t-shirt with a hole in the shoulder. Kitty asked him, What's your name?
Josh.
You should play with us, Josh, Kitty commanded. So he did. I didn't know it then, how important this boy would become to me and to the people I love the most. But even if I had known, what could I have done differently? It was never going to be me and him, even though. Chapter 13. I thought I was over him. When I wrote my letter, when I said my goodbyes, I meant it. I swear I did. It wasn't even that hard, not really. Not when I thought about how much Margot liked him, how much she cared. How could I begrudge Margot a first love? Margot, who'd sacrificed so much for all of us. She always, always put Kitty and me before herself. Letting go of Josh was my way of putting Margot first. But now, sitting here alone in my living room with my sister 4,000 miles away and Josh next door, all I can think is, Josh Sanderson, I liked you first. By all rights, you were mine. And if it had been me, I'd have packed you in my suitcase and taken you with me. Or, you know what? I would have stayed. I would have never left you. Not in a million years, not for anything. Thinking these kinds of thoughts, feeling these kinds of feelings, it's more than disloyal. I know that. It's downright traitorous. It makes my soul feel dirty. Margot's been gone less than a week, and look at me, how fast I cave, how fast I covet. I'm a betrayer of the worst kind, because I'm betraying my own sister, and there's no greater betrayal than that. But what now? What am I supposed to do with all these feelings? I suppose there's only one thing I can do. I'll write him another letter, a postscript, with as many pages as it takes to X away whatever feelings I have left for him. I'll put this whole thing to rest, once and for all. I go to my room, and I find my special writing pen, the one with the really smooth inky black ink. I take out my heavy writing paper and I begin to write. P.S. I still love you. I still love you, and that's a really huge problem for me, and it's also a really huge surprise. I swear I didn't know. All this time I thought I was over it. How could I not be when it's Margot you love? It's always been Margot. When I'm done, I put the letter in my diary instead of in my hat box. I have a feeling I'm not done yet, that there's still more I need to say. I just haven't thought of it yet. Chapter 14. Kitty's still mad at me. In the wake of the Josh revelation, I'd forgotten all about Kitty. She ignores me all morning, and when I ask if she wants me to take her to the store for school supplies, she snaps, "With what car? You wrecked Margot's." Ouch. I was going to take Daddy's when he comes back from Home Depot. I back away from her, far enough away that she can't lash out at me with a kick or a hit. "There's no need to be nasty, Catherine." Kitty practically growls, which is exactly the reaction I was hoping for. I hate when Kitty goes mad and silent. But then she flounces away, and with her back to me, she says, "I'm not speaking to you. You know what you did, so don't bother trying to get back on my good side." I follow her around, trying to provoke her into talking to me, but there's really no use. I've been dismissed. So I give up and go back to my room and put on the Mermaid soundtrack. I'm organizing my first week back-to-school outfits on my bed when I get a text from Josh. A little thrill runs up my spine to see his name on my phone, but I sternly remind myself of my vow. He is still Margot's, not yours. It doesn't matter that they're broken up. He was hers first, which means he's hers always. Wanna go for a bike ride on that trail by the park? Biking is a Margot-type activity. She loves going on trails and hikes and bikes. Not me. Josh knows it, too. I don't even own my own bike anymore, and Margot's is too big for me. Kitty's is more my size. I write back that I can't. I have to help my dad around the house. It's not a total lie. My dad did ask me to help him repot some of his plants, and I said only if he was making me, and if I had no say in the matter, then sure. What does he need help with? What to say? I have to be careful about my excuses. Josh can easily look out the window and see if I'm home or not. I text back a vague, "Just some random chores." Knowing Josh, he would show up with a shovel or a rake or whatever tool the chore entailed. And then he'd stay for dinner, because he always stays for dinner. He said I was keeping him going. Me, Lara Jean. I want to be that person for him. I want to be the one who keeps him going during this difficult time. I want to be his lighthouse keeper while we wait for Margot's return. But it's hard. Harder than I thought. Chapter 15. I wake up happy because it's the first day of school. I've always loved the first day of school better than the last day of school. Firsts are best because they're beginnings. While Daddy and Kitty are upstairs washing up, I make whole wheat pancakes with sliced bananas, Kitty's favorite. First day of school breakfast was always a big thing with my mom, and then Margot took over, and now I guess it's my turn. The pancakes are a little dense, not quite as light and fluffy as Margot's, and the coffee, well, is coffee supposed to be light brown like cocoa? When Daddy comes down, he says in a merry voice, "I smell coffee!" And then he drinks it and gives me a thumbs up. But I notice he only has the one sip. I guess I'm a better baker than I am a cook. "You look like a farm girl," Kitty says with a touch of meanness, and I know she's still at least a little bit mad at me. "Thank you," I say. I'm wearing faded shortalls and a scoop-neck floral shirt. It does look farm girlish, but I think in a nice way. Margot left her brown lace-up combat boots, and they're only a half-size too big. With thick socks, they're a perfect fit. "Will you braid my hair to the side?" I ask her. "You don't deserve a braid from me," Kitty says, licking her fork. "Besides, a braid would take it too far." Kitty is only 9, but she has good fashion sense. "Agreed," my dad says, not looking up from his paper. I put my plate in the sink and then put Kitty's bag lunch down next to her plate. It's got all her favorite things, a brie sandwich, barbecue chips, rainbow cookies, the good kind of apple juice. Have a great first day, my dad chirps. He pops out his cheek for a kiss, and I bend down and give him one. I try to give Kitty one, too, but she turns her cheek. I got your favorite kind of apple juice and your favorite kind of brie, I tell her pleadingly. I really don't want us to start the school year off on a bad note. Thank you, she sniffs. Before she can stop me, I throw my arms around her and squeeze her so tight she yelps. Then I get my new floral back-to-school book bag and head out the front door. It's a new day, a new year. I have a feeling it's going to be a good one. Josh is already in the car, and I run over and open the door and slide inside. You're on time, Josh says. He lifts his hand up for a high five, and when I slap it, our hands make a satisfying smack. That was a good one, he says. An 8 at least, I agree. We whiz past the pool, the sign for our neighborhood, then past the Wendy's. Has Kitty forgiven you yet for the other night? Not quite, but hopefully soon. Nobody can hold a grudge like Kitty, Josh says, and I nod wholeheartedly. I can never stay mad for long, but Kitty will nurse a grudge like her life depended on it. I made her a good first day of school lunch, so I think that'll help, I say. You're a good big sister. I pipe up with, as good as Margo? And together we chorus, nobody's as good as Margo. Chapter 16. School has officially begun and found its own rhythm. The first couple of days of school are always throwaway days of handing out books and syllabuses and figuring out where you're sitting and who you're sitting with. Now is when school really begins. For Jim, Coach White set us loose outside to enjoy the warm sun while we still have it. Chris and I are walking the track field. Chris is telling me about a party she went to over Labor Day weekend. I almost got in a fight with this girl who kept saying I was wearing extensions. It's not my fault my hair is fabulous. As we round the corner for our third lap, I catch Peter Kavinsky looking at me. I thought I was imagining it at first, him staring in my direction, but this is the third time. He's playing ultimate frisbee with some of the guys. When we pass them, Peter jogs over to us and says, "Can I talk to you for a minute?" Chris and I look at each other. Her or me? She asks. Lara Jean. Chris puts her arm around my shoulder protectively. Go ahead, we're listening. Peter rolls his eyes. I want to talk to her in private. Fine, she snaps and she flounces away. Over her shoulder she looks back at me with wide eyes like, what? I shrug back like, I have no idea. In a low, quiet voice, Peter says, just so you know, I don't have any STDs. What in the world? I stare at him, my mouth open. I never said you had an STD. His voice is still low, but actually furious. I also don't always take the last piece of pizza. What are you talking about? That's what you said in your letter. How... I'm an egotistical guy who goes around giving girls STDs, remember? What letter? I never wrote you any letter. Wait, yes I did. I did write him a letter about a million years ago, but that's not the letter he's talking about. It couldn't be. Yes, you did. It was addressed to me from you. Oh God, no, this isn't happening. This isn't reality. I'm dreaming. I'm in my room, and I'm dreaming, and Peter Kavinsky is in my dream, glaring at me. I close my eyes. Am I dreaming? Is this real? Lara Jean. I open my eyes. I'm not dreaming, and this is real. This is a nightmare. Peter Kavinsky is holding my letter in his hand. It's my handwriting, my envelope, my everything. How did you get that? It came in the mail yesterday. Peter sighs. Gruffly, he says, listen, it's no big deal. I just hope you're not going around telling people. It came in the mail? To your house? Yeah. I feel faint. I actually feel faint. Please, let me faint right now, because if I faint, I will no longer be here, in this moment. It will be like in the movies when a girl passes out from the horror of it all, and the fighting happens while she's asleep, and she wakes up in a hospital bed with a bruise or two, but she's missed all the bad stuff. I wish that was my life instead of this. I can feel myself start to sweat. Rapidly, I say, "You should know that I wrote that letter a really long time ago."
"Okay."
"Like years ago. Years and years ago. I don't even remember what I said." Up close, your face wasn't so much handsome as beautiful. "Seriously, that letter's from middle school. I don't even know who would have sent it. Can I see it?" I reach for the letter, trying to stay calm and not sound desperate. Just casual, cool. He hesitates and then grins his perfect Peter grin.
"Nah, I want to keep it. I never got a letter like this before."
I leap forward, and quick as a cat, I snatch it out of his hand. Peter laughs and throws up his hands in surrender.
"All right, fine, have it. Jeez."
"Thanks." I start to back away from him. The paper is shaking in my hand.
"Wait."
He hesitates.
"Listen, I didn't mean to steal your first kiss or whatever. I mean, that wasn't my intention."
I laugh. A forced and fake laugh that sounds crazy even to my own ears. People turn around and look at us. "Apology accepted, ancient history." And then I bolt. I run faster than I've ever run, all the way to the girls' locker room. How did this even happen? I sink to the floor. I've had the going to school naked dream before. I've had the going to school naked forget to study for an exam in a class I never signed up for combo. The naked exam, somebody trying to kill me combo. This is all that times infinity. And then, because there's nothing left for me to do, I take the letter out of the envelope and I read it. "Dear Peter K., first of all, I refuse to call you Kavinsky. You think you're so cool going by your last name all of a sudden? Just so you know, Kavinsky sounds like the name of an old man with a long white beard. Did you know that when you kissed me, I would come to love you? Sometimes I think yes. Definitely yes. You know why? Because you think everyone loves you, Peter. That's what I hate about you. Because not everyone does love you, including me. I did. Not anymore. Here are all your worst qualities. You burp, and you don't say excuse me. You just assume everyone else will find it charming. And if they don't, who cares, right? Wrong. You do care. You care a lot about what people think of you. You always take the last piece of pizza. You never ask if anyone else wants it. That's rude. You're so good at everything. Too good. You could have given other guys a chance to be good, but you never did. You kissed me for no reason, even though I knew you liked Jen, and you knew you liked Jen, and Jen knew you liked Jen. But you still did it, just because you could. I really want to know, why would you do that to me? My first kiss was supposed to be something special. I've read about it, what it's supposed to feel like. Fireworks and lightning bolts and the sound of waves crashing in your ears. I didn't have any of that. Thanks to you, it was as unspecial as a kiss could be. The worst part of it is, that stupid nothing kiss is what made me start liking you. I never did before. I never even thought about you before. Jen has always said that you are the best-looking boy in our grade, and I agreed, because, sure, you are. But I still didn't see the allure of you. Plenty of people are good-looking. That doesn't make them interesting or intriguing or cool. Maybe that's why you kissed me. To do mind control on me, to make me see you that way. It worked. Your little trick worked. From then on, I saw you. Up close, your face wasn't so much handsome as beautiful. How many beautiful boys have you ever seen? For me, it was just one. You. I think it's a lot to do with your lashes. You have really long lashes. Unfairly long. Even though you don't deserve it, fine. I'll go into all the things I liked about you. One time in science, nobody wanted to be partners with Jeffrey Settleman because he has B.O., and you volunteered like it was no big deal. Suddenly, everybody thought Jeffrey wasn't so bad. You're still in chorus, even though all the other boys take band and orchestra now. You even sing solos, and you dance, and you're not embarrassed. You were the last boy to get tall, and now you're the tallest, but it's like you earned it. Also, when you were short, no one even cared that you were short. The girls still liked you, and the boys still picked you first for basketball and gym. After you kissed me, I liked you for the rest of 7th grade and most of 8th. It hasn't been easy watching you with Jen, holding hands and making out at the bus loop. You probably make her feel very special, because that's your talent, right? You're good at making people feel special. Do you know what it's like to like someone so much you can't stand it and know that they'll never feel the same way? Probably not. People like you don't have to suffer through those kinds of things. It was easier after Jen moved and we stopped being friends. At least then I didn't have to hear about it. And now that the year is almost over, I know for sure that I am also over you. I'm immune to you now, Peter. I'm really proud to say that I'm the only girl in this school who has been immunized to the charms of Peter Kavinsky. All because I had a really bad dose of you in 7th grade and most of 8th. Now I never ever have to worry about catching you again. What a relief. I bet if I did ever kiss you again, I would definitely catch something, and it wouldn't be love. It would be an STD. Lara Jean Song. Chapter 17. If I could crawl into a hole and burrow in it comfortably and live out the rest of my days in it, well, then that is what I would do. Why did I ever have to bring up that kiss? Why? I still remember everything about that day at John Ambrose McLaren's house. We were in the basement, and it smelled like mildew and laundry detergent. I was wearing white shorts and an embroidered blue and white halter top I stole out of Margot's closet. I had on a strapless bra for the first time ever. It was one of Chris's, and I kept adjusting it because it felt unnatural. It was one of our first boy-girl hangouts, on a weekend and at night. That was a weird thing, too, because it felt purposeful. Not the same as going over to Allie's house after school and neighborhood boys were there hanging out with her twin brother. Also not the same as going to the arcade at the mall, knowing we would probably run into boys. This was making a plan, getting dropped off, wearing a special bra, all on a Saturday night. No parents around, just us, in John's ultra-private basement. John's older brother was supposed to be watching us, but John paid him $10 to stay in his room. Not that anything exciting happened. For instance, an impromptu game of Spin the Bottle or 7 minutes in Heaven, two possibilities for which us girls had prepared for with gum and lip gloss. All that happened was the boys played video games and us girls watched and played on our phones and whispered to each other. And then people's moms and dads were picking them up, and it was so anticlimactic after all that planning and anticipation. It was disappointing for me, not because I liked anyone, but because I liked romance and drama, and I was hoping something exciting would happen to someone. Something did. To me. Peter and I were downstairs alone, the last two people to be picked up. We were sitting on the couch. I kept texting my dad, "Where are you?" Peter was playing a game on his phone, and then out of nowhere he said, "Your hair smells like coconuts." We weren't even sitting that close. I said, "Really? You can smell it from there?" He scooted closer and took a sniff, nodding. "Yeah, it reminds me of Hawaii or something." "Thanks," I said. I wasn't positive it was a compliment, but it seemed like enough of one to say thanks. "I've been switching between this coconut one and my sister's baby shampoo to do an experiment on which makes my hair softer." Then Peter Kavinsky leaned right in and kissed me, and I was stunned. I'd never thought of him any kind of way before that kiss. He was too pretty, too smooth, not my type of boy at all. But after he kissed me, he was all I could think about for months after. What if Peter is just the beginning? What if my other letters somehow got sent too? To John Ambrose McLaren? Kenny from camp? Lucas Kraft? Josh. Oh my God. Josh. I leap up off the floor. I've got to find that hat box. I've got to find those letters. I go back outside to the track. I don't see Chris anywhere, so I guess she's smoking behind the field house. I go straight over to Coach, who's sitting on the bleachers with his phone. I can't stop throwing up, I whimper. I double over and cradle my arms to my stomach. Can I please go to the nurse's office? Coach barely looks up from his phone.
Sure.
As soon as I'm out of his eyeline, I make a run for it. Gym's my last period of the day, and my house is only a couple of miles from school. I run like the wind. I don't think I've ever run so hard or so fast in my life, and I likely never will again. I run so hard, a couple of times I have to stop, because I feel like I really am going to throw up. And then I remember the letters, and Josh, and up close your face wasn't so much handsome as beautiful, and I'm off and running again. As soon as I get home, I dash upstairs and go into my closet for my hat box. It's not sitting on the top shelf where it usually sits. It's not on the floor or behind my stack of board games. It's not anywhere. I get on my hands and knees and start rifling through piles of sweaters, shoeboxes, craft supplies. I look in places it could not possibly be because it's a hat box and it's big, but I look anyway. My hat box is nowhere. I collapse onto the floor. This is a horror movie. My life has become a horror movie. Next to me, my phone buzzes. It's Josh.
Where are you? Did you get a ride home with Chris?
I turn my phone off and go down to the kitchen and call Margot on the house phone. It's still my first impulse to go to her when things get bad. I'll just leave out the Josh part of it and focus on the Peter part. She'll know what to do. She always knows what to do. I'm all set to burst out, Gogo, I miss you so much and everything's a mess without you. But when she picks up the phone, she sounds sleepy and I can tell that I've woken her up. Were you sleeping? I ask.
No, I was just lying down, she lies.
Yes, you were sleeping. Gogo, it's not even 10 o'clock over there. Wait, is it? Did I calculate wrong again?
No, you're right. I'm just so tired. I've been up since 5 because...
Her voice trails off.
What's wrong?
I hesitate. Maybe it's better not to burden Margot with all of this. I mean, she just got to college. This is what she's worked for. This is her dream come true. She should be having fun and not worrying over how things are going back home without her. Besides, what would I even say? I wrote a bunch of love letters and they got sent out, including one I wrote to your boyfriend?
Nothing's wrong, I say. I'm doing what Margot would do, which is figure it out on my own.
It definitely sounds like something's wrong.
Margot yawns.
Tell me.
Go back to sleep, Gogo.
Okay, she says, yawning again. We hang up, and I make myself an ice cream sundae right in the carton. Chocolate sauce, whipped cream, chopped nuts, the works. I take it back up to my room and eat it lying down. I feed it to myself like medicine until I've eaten the whole thing. Every last bite. Chapter 18. A little while later, I wake up to Kitty standing at the foot of my bed.
You've got ice cream on your sheets, she informs me.
I groan and turn over to my side. Kitty, that's the least of my problems today.
Daddy wants to know if you want chicken for dinner or hamburgers. My vote is chicken.
I sit straight up. Daddy's home. Maybe he knows something. He was on that cleaning binge, throwing things away. Maybe he's spirited my hatbox away somewhere safe, and the Peter letter was just an unfortunate fluke. I jump out of bed and run downstairs, my heart thumping hard in my chest. My dad's in his study wearing his glasses and reading a thick book on Audubon paintings. All in one breath, I ask, Daddy, have you seen my hatbox? He looks up. His face is hazy, and I can tell he is still with Audubon's birds and not at all focused on my frenzied state.
What box?
My teal hatbox Mommy gave me.
Oh, that.
He says, still looking confused. He takes off his glasses.
I don't know. It might have gone the way of your roller skates.
What does that mean? What are you even saying?
Goodwill. There's a slight possibility I took them to Goodwill.
When I gasp, my dad says defensively,
Those roller skates don't even fit you anymore. They were just taking up space.
I sink to the floor.
They were pink, and they were vintage, and I was saving them for Kitty, and that's not even the point.
I don't care about the roller skates. I care about my hat box. Daddy, you don't even know what you've done!
My dad gets up and tries to pull me off the floor. I resist him and flop onto my back like a goldfish.
Laura Jean, I don't even know that I got rid of it. Come on, let's have a look around the house, all right? Don't let's panic yet.
There's only one place it could be, and it's not there. It's gone.
Then I will check Goodwill tomorrow on my way to work, he says, squatting down next to me. He's giving me that look, sympathetic but also exasperated and mystified, like, how is it possible that my sane and reasonable DNA created such a crazy daughter?
It's too late. It's too late. There's no point.
What was in that box that's so important?
I can feel my ice cream sundae curdling in my stomach. For the second time today, I feel like I'm going to be sick.
Only everything.
He grimaces.
I really didn't realize your mother had given it to you, or that it was so important.
As he retreats off to the kitchen, he says,
Hey, how about an ice cream sundae before dinner? Will that cheer you up?
As if dessert before dinner would be the thing that cheers me up. As if I am Kitty's age and not 16 going on 17. I don't even bother dignifying it with an answer. I just lie there on the floor, my cheek against the cool hardwood. Besides, there isn't any ice cream left anyway. But he'll find that out soon enough. I don't even want to think about Josh reading that letter. I don't even want to think it. It's too terrible. After dinner, chicken per Kitty's request, I'm in the kitchen doing dishes when I hear the doorbell ring. Daddy opens the door and I hear Josh's voice.
Hey, Dr. Covey, is Lara Jean around?
Oh, no. No, 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 no. I can't see Josh. I know I have to at some point, but not today. Not right this second. I can't. I just can't. I drop the plate back into the sink and make a run for it. Out the back door, down the porch steps, across the backyard to the Pierce's yard. I scramble up the wooden ladder and into Carolyn Pierce's old treehouse. I haven't been in this treehouse since middle school. We used to hang out up here sometimes at night. Chris and Genevieve and Allie and me. The boys a couple of times. I peek through the wooden slats, crouched in a ball, waiting until I see Josh walk back to his house. When I'm sure he's inside, I climb down the ladder and run back to mine. I sure have been doing a lot of running today. I'm exhausted now that I think about it. Chapter 19. I wake up the next morning renewed. I am a girl with a plan. I just have to avoid Josh forever. It's as simple as that. And if not forever, then at least until this dies down and he forgets about my letter. There's still the tiny chance he never even got it. Perhaps whoever mailed Peters only sent the one. You never know. My mom always said optimism was my best trait. Both Chris and Margot have said it's annoying, but to that I say, looking on the bright side of life never killed anybody. When I get downstairs, Daddy and Kitty are already at the table eating toast. I make myself a bowl of cereal and sit down with them.
I'm going to stop by Goodwill on my way to work, my dad says, crunching on his toast from behind his newspaper. I'm sure the hatbox will turn up there.
Your hatbox is missing? Kitty asks me. The one Mommy gave you?
I nod and shovel cereal into my mouth. I have to leave soon or else I'll risk running into Josh on my way out.
What was in the box, anyway? Kitty asks.
That's private, I say. All you need to know is the contents are precious to me.
Will you be mad at Daddy if you never get the hatbox back?
Kitty answers her own question before I can.
I doubt it. You never stay mad for long.
This is true. I never can stay mad for long. Peering over his newspaper, he asks Kitty,
What in the world was in that hatbox?
Kitty shrugs. Her mouth full of toast, she says,
Probably more French berets?
No, not more berets. I give them both a mean look. Now if you'll excuse me, I don't want to be late for school.
Aren't you leaving a little early?
I'm taking the bus today, I say, and probably every day until Margot's car is fixed. But they don't need to know that. Chapter 20. The way it happens is a strange sort of serendipity. A slow-motion train wreck. For something to go this colossally wrong, everything must intersect and collide at the exact right, or in this case, wrong moment. If the bus driver hadn't had trouble backing out of the cul-de-sac, taking 4 extra minutes to get to school, I never would have run into Josh. If Josh's car had started up and he hadn't had to get a jump from his dad, he wouldn't have been walking by my locker. And if Peter hadn't had to meet Ms. Wooten in the guidance office, he would not have been walking down the hallway 10 seconds later, and maybe this whole thing would not have happened. But it did. I'm at my locker. The door is jammed and I'm trying to yank it open. I finally get the door loose, and there's Josh standing right there. Lara Jean. He has this shell-shocked, confused expression on his face. I've been trying to talk to you since last night. I came by and nobody could find you. He holds out my letter. I don't understand. What is this? I don't know, I hear myself say. My voice feels far away. It's like I'm floating above myself, watching it all unfold. I mean, it's from you, right? Oh, wow. I take a breath and accept the letter. I fight the urge to tear it up. Where did you even get this? It got sent to me in the mail. Josh jams his hands into his pockets. When did you write this? Like a long time ago, I say. I let out a fake little laugh. I don't even remember when. It might have been middle school. Good job, Lara Jean. Keep it up. Slowly, he says. Right, but you mentioned going to the movies with Margot and Mike and Ben that time. That was a couple of years ago. I bite my bottom lip. Right. I mean, it was kind of a long time ago, in the grand scheme of things. I can feel tears coming on so close that if I break concentration even for a second, if I waver, I will cry, and that will make everything worse, if such a thing is possible. I must be cool and breezy and nonchalant now. Tears would ruin that. Josh is staring at me so hard I have to look away. So then, do you... or did you have feelings for me, or... I mean, yes, sure, I did have a crush on you at one point, before you and Margot ever started dating, a million years ago. Why didn't you ever say anything? Because, Lara Jean, God, I don't know. His eyes are on me, and they're confused, but there's something else, too. This is crazy. I feel kind of blindsided. The way he's looking at me now, I'm suddenly in a time warp back to a summer day when I was 14 and he was 15, and we were walking home from somewhere. He was looking at me so intently, I was sure he was going to try to kiss me. I got nervous, so I picked a fight with him and he never looked at me like that again. Until this moment. Don't. Just please, don't. Whatever he's thinking, whatever he wants to say, I don't want to hear it. I will do anything, literally anything, not to hear it. Before he can say, I say, I'm dating someone. Josh's jaw goes slack. What? What? Yep, I'm dating someone. Someone I really, really like, so please don't worry about this. I wave the letter like it's just paper, trash, like once upon a time I didn't literally pour my heart onto this page. I stuff it into my bag. I was really confused when I wrote this. I don't even know how it got sent out. Honestly, it's not worth talking about, so please, please don't say anything to Margot about it. He nods, but that's not good enough. I need a verbal commitment. I need to hear the words come out of his mouth, so I add, do you swear? On your life? If Margot was to ever find out, I would want to die. All right, I swear. I mean, we haven't even spoken since she left. I let out a huge breath. Great, thanks. I'm about to walk away, but then Josh stops me. Who's the guy? What guy? The guy you're dating. That's when I see him. Peter Kavinsky walking down the hallway, like magic. Beautiful, dark-haired Peter. He deserves background music. He looks so good. Peter Kavinsky! Peter Kavinsky! The bell rings and I sail past Josh. I've gotta go. Talk later, Josh. Wait, he calls out. I run up to Peter and launch myself into his arms like a shot out of a cannon.
I've got my arms around his neck and my legs hooked around his waist, and I don't even know how my body knows how, because I've for sure never touched a boy like this in my life. It's like we're in a movie and the music is swelling and the waves are crashing around us, except for the fact that Peter's expression is registering pure shock and disbelief, and maybe